Thankfully, the last time our country as a whole was involved in a war was back in World War II, and before that World War I. And as David said earlier on the green, we celebrate and commemorate the 80th anniversary of the end of World War II. And even though there are wars going on now, they seem far away to most people. Even the war in Ukraine now seems remote to many after that initial burst of interest and trepidation over what it might mean for us. And the horrors of the Israel-Gaza war have been on the news so many times, yet it still seems far away. We live in a particular location, at a particular point in history, where war seems to happen to other people, not us. But it's not been like that for the vast majority of our history. During World War II, for example, Norfolk, which only had a population of something under 500,000, had 6 battalions of men in the Royal Norfolk Regiment, a battalion somewhere between 500 and 1,000 men. 6 battalions who were involved in actual combat, men who fought and some of whom who died. There were other battalions, training ones and so on, and more Norfolk men fought in other regiments. They were also in the Royal Navy, the Merchant Navy, the RAF. And that Royal Norfolk Regiment of men, mainly from Norfolk. The men of the 1st Battalion landed in Normandy on D-Day and had to fight through for nearly a year to the end of the war. The men of the 2nd Battalion fought in France in 1940. A battalion of between 500 and 1,000 men, only 31 made it back to Britain. When they reformed the battalion, the 2nd Battalion fought in India and Burma as part of what was called the British 2nd Army that turned the tide against the Japanese at Kohima and Imphal and pushed them right out of Burma. There they fought alongside Indian soldiers, other British soldiers, Gurkhas from Nepal, and African colleagues as well. They were part of the Forgotten Army. The men of the 4th, 5th and 6th Battalion landed in Singapore and almost straight away went into captivity. They became prisoners of war and suffered 3 horrific years of captivity. And of British prisoners of war in the Far East, about 25% died in captivity. The men of the last battalion I want to speak about are the men of the 7th Battalion, including my father-in-law Stan. And they fought in Normandy, from Normandy through Holland and into Germany. But they fought in those latter places as part of other battalions, because when they fought in Normandy, they suffered so many casualties that they disbanded the battalion and the survivors moved to other units. And I can remember Stan showing my wife Sue and me a photo of the 7th Battalion before they went to Normandy. 500 or so young men. Only half of them survived the war. 50%, hundreds of Norfolk men died fighting for us. And I don't know about you, but I really struggle to imagine what it must have been like for those men and their families, and for those who have fought in wars since then, like Korea, just a few years after the end of the Second World War, and various emergencies around the world, and Afghanistan and Iraq and the troubles in Northern Ireland. Those men and their families suffered so that you and I can be free, so we can live in liberty. Many gave their lives for us, and we have to be truly thankful for what they did. And it's so pleasing to see so many here today. But shame on us if we ever are not truly thankful, or if we take what they did for granted. Jesus once said, "Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends." I'll say that again. "Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends." And we often quote that saying of Jesus in remembrance services like today, and rightly so. Jesus was speaking about losing one's life for the sake of others. Though he was also speaking about serving others in life as well as in death. He himself gave his life for us on the cross. It's so amazing and humbling what so many did in the wars on our behalf, costing many people their life to save us. Such love and sacrifice. I don't know about you, but I can't get my head around that properly. And even more so, I can't get my head around what Jesus did for us on the cross 2,000 years ago in a sacrifice of all sacrifices. There was an early Christian leader called Paul, the Apostle Paul, Saint Paul if you like. And he wrote to a group of Christians in those early days. He wrote of Jesus and said that though Jesus was existing in the form of God, i.e. he was truly God, he didn't consider equality with God as something to be held on to. Instead, he emptied himself by assuming the form of a servant, taking on the likeness of humanity. In other words, he became man as well. And when he had become as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even to death on a cross for you and me. We are in eternal debt to those who fought and died to bring us freedom in this world. May we ever remember them and honour them, because they suffered for us. God knows what it is to experience suffering too, suffering on this for the sake of others. The core part of the Christian message from the very start was that Jesus died on a cross to bring us freedom, not from external enemies, but from the sin that enslaves us and alienates us from God. His sacrifice enables those who accept God's forgiveness to live not just life, a life of freedom in this life, brilliant though that is, but also to be able to see the words of our readings come to fruition. One day God promises, as we heard in our readings, that one day there will be a new heaven and a new earth. And as the reading from Revelation said, there will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things will have passed away and we can be with God forever. We automatically, by our birth, get what those men fought for and suffered for, what they achieved. But what Jesus offers us, what he offers you and me, is something we have to decide for ourselves, whether we want that as well.